TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got your hold of
it. Oh, no, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 601, and I'm Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hey, it's Peter. I write for We Live Entertainment, and I live in Hollywood.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write for 6 Degrees of Geek.
Hi, this is Tom. I chair visual and media arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida, which is completely not like what's on that new Apple TV Plus show.
All right, Tom, why don't you hit us with the news?
Oh my gosh, lots of news. ABC has announced that Joshua Jackson will star in Ryan Murphy's medical procedural Dr. Odyssey. AMC has rescued Snowpiercer Season 4.
Yay!
And AMC streamer Acorn TV bought Daphne Levin's Israeli crime thriller The Truth for the US, UK, Australia, and New Zealand. Apple TV Plus announced that Jurnee Smollett has been cast opposite Taron Egerton in Firebug about arson investigators. Owen Wilson will star in an upcoming untitled golf comedy series from writer Jason Keller. Both will executive produce. And pachinko creator Sue Hugh has signed a multi-year overall deal. CBS has renewed Fire Country for season 3 and Ghost for season 4, NCIS Sydney for season 2. Speaking of which, the 1,000th episode of the NCIS franchise.
1,000?
If you include all the NCIS series, it includes...
Oh, okay.
All of them.
I mean, we have a prequel coming, too, so, you know.
So, well, don't step on my news. So,
oh, sorry.
the 1,000th episode will air on 4/15 and will feature... Tax Day! It'll feature appearances by NCIS LA vet Daniela Rua and NCIS Hawaii star Vanessa Lachey. NCIS Origins has also cast Kyle Schmid to play the young Mike Franks. You might remember him. He played a CEO in History Channel's miniseries 6. CBS Studios has cast Randall Park, Yvette Nicole Brown, Elijah Wood, and Ashley Johnson in Among Us, the animated series. No outlet yet. CW announced that Superman and Lois has added Douglas Smith as Jimmy Olsen for its fourth and final season. Disney Plus fired X-Men 97 creator Bo DeMeo ahead of its premiere.
What?
It's still mysterious why, but the show is really good. We'll talk about that later. They also gave a series order for the Wizards of Waverly Place sequel series, which will premiere later this year. Selena Gomez and David Henry will EP and star, and David Schwimmer and Anna Ortiz from Ugly Betty will star in Ghostbumps Season 2. The Bears Season 4 at FX will film directly after Season 3. And 9 Perfect Strangers Season 2 is cast Henry Golding, Mark Strong, and Lena Olin.
Hallmark. Oh, I like Lena Olin.
Sorry. I do too. Bad Mama from Alias. Hallmark has picked up The Way Home, family time travel drama for Season 3. Max will stream The Boy and the Heron and has renewed its deal with Studio Ghibli, and Salem's Lot is skipping theaters to go directly to Max later this year. NBC has picked up Law & Order SVU for season 26, Original Recipe for season 24, and Chicago Fire, PD, and Med for seasons 13, 12, and 10, respectively.
No organized crime!
And they're developing New Amsterdam Tomorrow, focusing on Max's grown daughter 30 years in the future. Netflix has cast Brian Cox, Fiona Shaw, Jodie Whittaker, and Bill Nighy to star in an animated adaptation of That Christmas based on Richard Curtis' children's book series. Anna Camp and Griffin Matthews have been cast in You Season 5. Eric Bana will star in the limited series Untamed from Mark L. Smith and L. Smith. It's about a National Park Service agent investigating a brutal death. Nickelodeon's kind of rocked by the docuseries Quiet on the Set, which dropped explosive allegations about pedophilia, sexual harassment, toxic work environment, and more during Dan Schneider's tenure at the Children's Network. Paramount Plus made a surprise drop of Ark, the animated series based on Ark Survival Evolved video game. The executive producers include Vin Diesel, Gerard Butler, Russell Crowe, and lots more. They've also bought the Zorro series with Jean Dujardin, who won the Oscar for The Artist, and he will play Zorro. Peacock has announced Jessica Biel will star in a limited series adaptation of Karen Slaughter's novel, The Good Daughter. Pete Davidson opted not to continue with Bupkis despite its previous renewal for season two. Showtime unrenewed Uncoupled.
Oh, I saw that. Oh, man.
Neil Patrick Harris comedy that they had rescued from Netflix. Stars has announced that Power Book 2 Ghost will end with season 4 this year, but they've ordered a fourth Power spinoff series, Origins, about young Ghost and Tommy. What's up with all these young versions of things? I mean, young Sheldon was like the start, and like everybody else is doing it.
They want to see how people got to where they are, I guess. They want that origin story.
Or they're lazy creating new...
Well, okay, sure, that too. But... All right, is that all the news you have?
That is everything.
All righty. All right, let's start off with The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, and we're going to talk about episode 3. And I was forgetting the title because they go together. So first episode was Years, and the second one was Gone, and this one was called Bye. And so episode 3, which was Bye, is basically now Rick and Michonne are inside the CRM, and Michonne, now known as Dana, is supposed to pretend to be a B instead of an A, which proved to be very difficult for her because she doesn't really know how to do that.
And she's an alpha.
She's an alpha plus. So she didn't, like, what was crazy to me was she's minding her own business, killing, walking to the wall, and then her like, mate or whatever, the woman standing next to her was like, oh, you're obviously a badass and know what you're doing. And Michonne's like, what makes you think that? I've totally been pretending to be fine and nothing. And she's like, I don't know, it's just the way you walk. And I was like, she could be sitting in a corner doing nothing and people would be like, you're obviously a leader. Because she, I think she was in that group in episode 2 for one day and 20 people started following her and she didn't even talk to those people. So yes, she is a leader. She is an alpha female and she can't really, and I give her mild points in that she tried to hide it up until Rick made her angry, and then she was like, screw this. And then she just stopped pretending. So, Peter, you haven't been on the podcast in a while, so can you hit me? What did you think of episode 3?
Well, now I'm trying to... because I was all ready to talk about episode 4. I just
set you up for it. Okay, go ahead.
No, the thing I like about 3, interestingly, like... yes, I mean... I've actually really liked this show in general, but the thing that I thought I'm pretty sure that 3 kind of solidifies was they give you this kind of she's returning, but it's the person who I see as basically the main antagonist of the show. The one with the bad hair. The one that Rick says with the bad haircut.
Yeah, right.
Wait, is it Jadis?
Jadis.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's good. I like that actress. I was like, she's kind of a different presence for the show. And I feel like she was... I don't remember her too much from the original Walking Dead, but I do. Libby, you had reminded me that she was kind of goofy. She's not that goofy. I feel like because it's been 7 years later, she's more reserved now, but she's still very cunning. So I was like, oh, okay. That's an interesting kind of villain, like, for them. And I like that she's like, you know, I'm changing the, you know, I am altering the deal, you know, as Vader would say, like that. She's like, or Rick is like, well, why did you not worried about me escaping? She's like, well, it was just you. But if it's both of you, you guys can do anything. And that's something that like is, you know, brought up later, but that actually might be the next episode. But I really like, I guess my big takeaway in that episode was I really thought they finally had a good, like, kind of antagonist. I mean, and we also have Terry O'Quinn, who's a great actor or whatever, but I don't know. I just like this Jadis as a push-pull like kind of character. So that's what I like that from what I'm remembering, sorry, from that episode.
Tom, your thoughts?
I want to talk about episode 4.
But we at least pretend that we watched 3.
I did watch 3 and Jadis annoys me. I mean, she's a good antagonist and I'm like, who is this person this is my re-entry to the Walking Dead universe since the middle of season 4 when they botched the governor's return. So I had to find out that she was on two other Walking Dead series before this. So I'm like, okay, right. Obviously they have history and she's not completely evil, but just mostly evil.
Yeah, mostly. She killed...
she's kind of evil.
She killed 90,000 people. So I'm going to put her on the evil category.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember when they showed in episode one that the city of Omaha got bombed? She's the one that bombed it. So...
Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't know how borderline that is. But
the actor's terrific despite that terrible haircut.
That's what I was going to say. The thing that was so great was when Rick was like, yeah, you're a hero with the terrible haircut.
Bad hair. Yeah, that was pretty great.
That was apparently an Andrew Lincoln ad-lib for you right there.
Hey, but you can be executive producer. You can do stuff like that.
An ad-lib. But yeah, the main thing I wanted to talk about, three, was the fact that this episode allowed four to happen, which is Rick acting irrationally. And correct. talking to Michonne like she's someone that she's not. I was like, dude, have you met her? Like, why are you talking to her?
Seriously.
Like that?
I wanted to smack him.
Yeah, and he was like, I'll knock you out and put you on that boat and blah, blah. And I was like, wait, what? Like, who are you talking to?
She'd be like, challenge accepted. See if you can.
I know. That was what was so great. Was you go through all of this and you can tell that everything that he's doing in episode three is from fear. Jadis threatens him, and I think he did initially think him and Michonne were going to escape, but then Jadis threatens him, and so he's like, all right, fine. I'll stay as long as Michonne can leave. And so he's thinking he's sacrificing himself, but the problem is Michonne's not just going to do what he tells her to do. That's not the person she is. And while he's like, he's trying to lie to her and get her to do stuff. And I was like, dude, that's not going to work. And so he does the whole breakup speech. We're broken. We're done. And she's like, I'll raise you're done with my yanking you out of this helicopter. And I was just like, episode three ended with my jaw on the ground. Like, I legit was sitting there staring at the screen. Just like, what? And then after my initial shock, I just laughed for like the next couple minutes. It was just really funny to me. So now we can get into episode four, since that's where you guys are chomping at the bit, which to be fair, that's where all the meat in this discussion is. And it was written
eat
by
your
the
veggies
lovely...
before your main course.
Yes, this
or your
episode,
dessert.
This episode was written by the lovely Danai Gurira. And who wants to lead the discussion? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Go ahead.
She's got it going on. I mean, just in terms as an actor, as a writer, I won't be surprised if the show continues, which I'm sure. Have they picked it up for season two yet?
It was originally supposed to be a limited series.
Yeah, nobody believed that, dude.
I'm just saying, technically speaking, it's supposed to be a limited series. Yeah, I think because the ratings were insane and they got all this critical acclaim and all of that, they may be talked into doing more, is what I'm saying.
If it was supposed to be a limited series,
so it's not going
to
finish
episode four.
We have six episodes. They said that this story is supposed to be wrapped up at the end of episode. I don't see how that's possible at this point, but they said that it's supposed to be wrapped up with a dot, dot, dot. That's what Andrew Lincoln said.
Well, you could wrap. I mean, all you basically have to do in the final episode is get them to where the kids are, and then that's it, right?
Yes, but you have the threat of the CRM kind of hanging there.
Yeah,
that would be the dot, dot, dot. Would be they're now you're back with Judith and RJ, and now they have to prepare for the CRM.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves, guys. Go ahead, Tom.
No, basically the episode is mostly a two-hander with Rick and Michonne and intermittent zombie attacks. But
and a Zumba.
And a Roomba.
Roomba.
The villain of the episode was the Roomba. Scared Rick to death.
It's basically them having a series of hard parts before they get it on, but he's trying to justify his actions and she's trying to figure out what's wrong with you. And I'm like, dude, man up. And then, watching the commentary with the actors talking. And by the way, it's disconcerting to hear Andrew Lincoln talk with his natural British accent because he does such a great Southern accent. But Rick's clearly got serious trauma from being there all those years and just, you know, a little bit of Stockholm syndrome, a lot of trauma. And she's basically, the Rick that she was expecting is not the Rick she found. And she's like, what's up with that? So, and he still thinks he's trying to save her.
Right.
And she's like, when have you ever needed me to be saved, dude? Have you know me at all? But yeah
that's not what she's just looking for. Yeah.
But man, the two of them have crazy mad chemistry. And I kind of feel sorry for the memory of his late wife character because he says, you are my one true love.
You are the love of my life.
Forget about the my first two babies.
Yeah.
Oh, just I one mean, baby.
No, she's no. not Judith. Carl and Judith. That's two.
No, but he's actually not the father of Judith.
But he is, but she still gave birth to both of those kids is his
Oh, sorry. You're right. I misunderstood. Yeah. Right.
But no, it was a great, this episode had just the right amount of zombie hits in it.
Me too.
I think too many times they default to it's about the zombies. And the reason I got into the show at the beginning was it's about zombies like Battlestar Galactica. It's about spaceships. And then
right, it would be the same about it'd be like why The Last of Us isn't really about the clickers. It's
no,
just like, yeah,
no.
you need that threat. You do. You need it, but that's not really why we watch these shows. Like
that's right. Yeah. But no, this is Danai Gurira as I mean, she's an Obie award-winning playwright, but man, she just I mean, when she was explaining about the symbolism of the building actually falling, and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't think about that.
Also, what are you talking about?
There's two things of symbolism she did. One was the AI voice talking about the temperature. Every time the AI voice was talking about the temperature, it was actually talking about the two of them.
Oh, that makes sense.
That was
great.
And
then the building falling, she said it was like a cocoon. And she was like, we're either going to come out of it moths or butterflies, something, you know. So it was that building was their transformation. Like they were going to transform in there. Hmm. And that's why it needed to be destroyed at the end.
Yeah. But she, I'd love to sit in on a dramatic writing workshop that she led because, you know.
Well, she does do a writer's conference every year because disengaged from social media. She's like, I'm going to my writer's retreat. And she does it every year and she goes off. And so you can go join her. Have fun. Mm. But anyway, my thing that I loved about this was I like when she talked about all that anger she had at Rick at the beginning, because I was feeling it too. She said that she couldn't see that his trauma because of her anger. And she had to get past her own anger to see his trauma in order to help him. And that moment where they're actually having sex and he has a panic attack in the middle of the sex scene, I was like, what is going on? And she just like grounded him and calmed everything down. And it was like, that was like the most intimate scene I've like ever seen, because they were like in each other's eyes and just really connecting in a way that I don't think I've seen on any show. So I was really moved by that. And then finally, the thing that I also liked was her telling him how much he was hurting her was what allowed him to speak and tell her what was hurting him, what was his issue. And it showed that somebody was like, it was like a marriage story, but better, was what someone said online. So, because it talks about like what you have to go through in a serious relationship where there's serious cracks in the foundation of that relationship, and what she could have walked out and left and just been done with him and just been like, I'm done. There were plenty of points where I thought that. I was like, just leave him. Like I was yelling at the screen, like, just leave him. But, you know, she fought for it, and she fought for every inch of that relationship. And yeah, that made that was really impressive to me. So, Peter, any thoughts?
I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you guys are saying. I really I thought it was really terrific. I don't know if there's anything really to add here. I liked the the building as this kind of cocoon setting. I also liked how weirdly clean it was, because in the world of The Walking Dead, so much is usually kind of, you know, dirty and crappy. So it was like, that's kind of an interesting place for them to have this conversation, to have this thing, because everything is so kind of perfect in a way. And then of course, yes, it gets destroyed.
What about
Paul? Yeah, and also I appreciated, there were certain things I was worried about in episode 3, where basically Jadis is like, here's the situation. And I was like, oh man, I hope this isn't going to be one of those things where like Rick isn't going to tell Michonne what's going on. So he does in the 4th episode. I was like, okay, good. And then she's like, well, what's the problem? We can just do this. I liked that Michonne basically almost as like an audience stand-in. She'll, you know, like in a tennis match or whatever, she lobbies back every one of Rick's like
excuses, what he thinks
the way it's supposed to be. And she's like, why would we do that? Like, yeah. Which is very much, I think, what most of us are feeling. We're like, no, man, that's a terrible idea or whatever.
Well,
I think Andrew Lincoln does sell it though, that even though we're frustrated, he does make it work though, because I'm on Michonne's side, but I was never like, oh, Rick, you're such a jerk. I was just like, oh, I get it. Like, this guy is so messed up. You know, it's been years. So I thought that push-pull worked really well.
I was going to say, can you speak on Carl real quick? The Carl callback?
Wait, what?
Carl?
Wait, what about you mean when she gives him the phone?
Yeah, that's like, speak about that a little bit.
I liked that. Maybe I'm not saying what you want me to. Oh, wait. Before that, though, is this the episode where he finds out he has another kid?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I totally forgot that. Like, yeah.
It was good, but it was also his reaction to that was not what I was expecting. I was expecting. Well,
yeah, because he kind of didn't react and didn't. And
he didn't react at all. Yeah.
And he's like, what? I just told you you have another son.
And he did not even react. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, what were you going to say, Libby, about the Carl thing?
The Carl, like, that was the center of his PTSD, was that he forgot.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's why I was reminding him.
And then I don't see him any. I forgot. I totally forgot about that. And then he's like, and then I dreamed about you. And then I couldn't see you anymore. And I was like, oh, yeah, I thought that was really powerful. So I'm sorry. I totally flaked on that. Yes. Yeah. I did like that.
Yeah. So I just like the fact that even though Carl is gone from the show, he's still impacting the show in a way that I think is really moving. Because this episode made me angry, made me go through everything, but then the Carl bit is where I actually shed a couple of tears. So anyway, let's move on. This was definitely a 10 out of 10. Episode 4 was 10 out of 10.
Yeah, it was great.
All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about Invincible. We're talking about episode 5 and 6 has been on a break and it just came back. Allison, are you there?
Yep.
So what did you think of these new episodes now that it's back?
I think they're doing a good job of it. I think I didn't understand the point of the hiatus in the first place, kind of really. It's since it broke at an odd point. It's like had all this momentum going and then all of a sudden, all right. But it picks up exactly where it left off the last time, you know, where we've just seen the destruction of the planet and his dad is carted away to presumably be executed.
And he's got a blue brother.
And he is a purple brother, actually.
Oh, sorry, purple brother.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I don't know. I figured, you know, if he's going to combine with this insectoid creature, you'd see a little more difference than just, you know, purple skin.
Purple?
But yeah, I mean, he otherwise looks like a normal baby, but, you know, in any case, I like what they're doing with the story.
They say the kid's going to super grow, though.
Yeah, he's probably going to, I think they're probably going to have him, like, grow up and age out and probably die of old age before the season is out.
No, they're not going to do that, because that's why the mom gave him away, because she said that her lifespan was so short that he was really going to outlive him.
Yeah, and but also they also warned that he has a short lifespan too, not as short as theirs. They live and die in a matter of like days or weeks.
Yeah, but the Veltramites live a really long time. And so she mm-hmm. was like, that's why he needs to be raped by humans, because his lifespan is actually going to be longer than humans. They said that. He's not.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, the only thing they said is that he's going to become an adult faster.
Because in the second episode, he's already a toddler and, you know, using words and things like that. So he's developing very, very quickly.
Yeah, but I think they didn't just make him disappear. He's going to be fighting beside his brother, I feel, by the end of the season.
Yeah. But they have all kinds of interesting things going on. You know, they split the team and had them battle in two separate places. And one of those battles,
ooh!
Well, actually neither of them are going particularly well in the first episode.
Oh my God.
But in the second one,
bloody.
Wow.
It's
like, am I watching The Boys now?
It was so bad that I was like, I mean, they were technically they weren't main characters, but they were main characters adjacent, and they murdered the crap out of them in really horrible ways.
Horrible ways.
Horrible
especially
ways.
Duplicate over and over again.
One of them got eaten, and I was just like, no. And then the guy, his hand, it just got eaten off, and just like, no. It was just, and then shot in the head, then
it was bad. I was staring at it, thinking, my God. I mean, they really went to town on that.
But then the thing is, they shoot him in the head, and he doesn't just get shot in the head. They have him on the ground, and just blood just keeps spurting out of his head. They just spurt. I was like, is this necessary? This is not necessary.
It was pure shock, you know, let's freak out the audience, which, you know, definitely worked in that respect. On the other hand, they also took the time when they did the after credits bit of showing you that Alan is not actually dead. In fact, he's evolved into a being that could possibly take on a Viltrumite now.
Oh, and, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy who we assumed was the mole, who seemed to have killed him, actually did that for a reason. And it turns out, yes, he is a Viltrumite, but he's a Viltrumite who's against the other Viltrumites.
Right.
So all of that happened. And that was nice. I was very glad to see Alan back, because Alan is like this little point of humor and fun in
he's
the middle
hilarious.
Of this show. I adore his
hilarious.
Character.
Yeah.
And I was upset when I thought that they'd actually, you know, offed him. So
I didn't see that coming
back.
Too. Yeah. But what was great is when he runs into the immortal guy. And more of a dude is just trying to pick a fight. He's like, dude, hello, how are you doing? The guy punches him in the face. He's like, no, I just want to say hi. I'm not trying to fight you. And he just keeps trying to fight him. And I like that Invincible showed up. And he's like, why are you guys fighting? And he was like, I don't know. This guy just keeps hitting me. That was really good. And then they try to do the mind-to-mind thing. He goes, oh, wait, no, that only works with you and me and him. You can't
talk. There's an
to
update
him.
Coming, though.
Yeah,
so.
That was really good. Yeah, all of that was great. And I like that, what is his name when he's not invincible? Kevin something? I forgot.
Oh, my God, no.
The baby's name is Oliver.
Yeah, they just named him Oliver. Because I guess, why not?
All right, and then I just feel like she's bonding with him, so I like that. It was difficult for her, which I totally get, but the baby didn't do anything to anybody, so I really like that she bonded with him.
Yeah, it's not the kid's fault.
All right, but I'm going to say thumbs up. So far, so good. I'm liking where the story is going this season. Oh, and we did check in on the dad at the very
Yes, he's still around, apparently. It's Viltrumites don't kill each other off terribly easily, so they're taking the time to torture him and see if they can get him to turn back in the meantime. That's not going especially well, so
yeah,
all of that. So, and Invincible's real name is Mark.
Thank you. All right, next up we're gonna talk X-Men 97, and I'm gonna let Tom start this off because you're our comic book guy. What did you think, Tom, of X-Men 97? Does it live up to what you remember from the old school?
I kind of like it better than what I remember of the original series.
I mean, it looks better. Yeah.
It looked great. and the storyline was focused. Yeah, I mean, they brought back, I mean, it's basically as if the show hadn't stopped because it's set, you know, as an extension thereof. But no, I thought the plot line was great. They got us into the action quickly. They, you know, they gave us enough of what happened at, as the original series was ending to get us into this one. And they were like, go, go. I mean, I watched both episodes back to back. It's like, more. And,
one of my friends was complaining
about having to wait a week. It's like, okay, this is how TV started. And I think more streaming services are going to adopt this
because they realize they've
got to get people to keep paying to see it.
Peter, go ahead.
I really liked it. A friend of mine had seen it before I saw it. A guy I see at a screening. And he was like, one thing that they captured really well about the original X-Men 90s show, he's like, that you wouldn't think would work the way we've kind of evolved with how we tell stories and stuff, is that 90s cartoon always had characters that were basically exposition things where they're just like over explaining things because it's, you know, a younger audience or whatever. And he's like, and they're kind of doing that in this show, but it's obviously done in a kind of winking way where it'd be like, of course your mutant powers that you, or whatever they'll say. And I was like, oh, they are kind of doing that. I was like, but I guess I enjoy it a lot. One thing I wanted to know, like, I know that Jennifer Hale, who is the voice of Femme Shep on Mass Effect, she is Jean Grey. But it does sound like some of the voice actors are the original voice
actors. They are.
Which is really cool. What?
Yeah,
almost all of them are the original voice actors.
Because I know Jennifer Hale obviously isn't. Because I was like, well, she's like 45 or something. It's like, so there's no way that was her. But so you guys are saying a lot of them are the same people, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I agree. I agree with, I'm glad they gave us two episodes because it is, I mean, it doesn't take very long to watch one. They're pretty quick and everything. And I was very much like, oh, I got to watch the next one. Like, but I do appreciate that it's going to be kind of like a weekly show. This is kind of a weird thing right now with, I mean, we'll get to this with Three Body Problem, where it's interesting because sometimes I really like binging things and other times I like the idea of something that I can kind of marinate over for the week.
And look forward to, too.
Yeah, it's looking forward to. So actually, I'm not saying that X-Men 97 is like super deep, like Three Body Problem or whatever, but I don't mind being like, oh, I look forward to seeing this over the next few weeks or whatever.
I want to ask you guys a story question, which is, what do you think of Magneto taking over the school?
That's from the comic.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think that's the comic. I think Tom's right.
Still, yeah. I want to know what you think about it. That's all I'm saying.
I thought it was great. Good for them. What's interesting is the original.
I don't know if you can trust. I like the whole, I don't know if you can trust him. And I like all of that.
Well, he's Magneto. Of course you can't.
He's Magneto. Like, wait, question. So are we saying that Magneto is never going to use that helmet anymore? Because the helmet was basically because of Charles.
Right.
He didn't want Charles in his head.
Yeah, that blocks him. So if he's not there, you know.
But Jean Grey can do that too. I mean.
True.
I mean, there are other ones.
Yeah, but I feel like he thinks that he's not going to be a target of just random people. He was definitely a target for Charles. So that's why he wore it.
Oh, my God. We didn't even talk about, devastating the thing with Storm.
Oh, yes.
That was
unexpected. I was like, no. I knew as soon as it hit her, I was like, oh, man, it's going to take away her powers, isn't it? So I was like, that's what's going to happen. Like,
I didn't know that. I thought it was supposed to kill her.
I was pretty sure, because I feel like they've done that before in movies and comics where it's like, it's something, a serum, and that's what it does and stuff.
Yeah,
so
my thing is, I mean, I can't see them getting rid of Storm entirely.
No, they won't, but it could be the whole season that she doesn't have her powers. I mean,
I don't like it.
Well, but it's, I mean, it's an interesting thing.
It is. She has to live without it. Like, I agree. Yeah.
Oh, one thing. Wait, Tom, remind me. Wait, so Rogue and Eric, they have a relationship?
Yeah, I didn't remember that either.
That I did not remember, so yeah. I'm not.
No, Pat felt bad for poor Gambit. Oh, Gambit's sad with his cards. So I was like, but
one of my friends was like, hey, the 90s, maybe it'll bring back male crop tops. And I'm thinking, maybe not.
But yeah, because I was like, well, wait, isn't Eric, like, how, what's the age difference between, I guess
that's pretty decently big.
Yeah, because I mean, he's a he's a peer of Charles, so right. He's more like a father. I was like, okay. I was like,
but right, he's dude. One of the few people that can touch her. That's the main
correct.
Thing.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know why he can touch her, though.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Why? Yeah, why would his metal thing be able to...
Yeah, I don't get it, but
I don't know.
All right, well, we're going to move on.
But it was good. It was good. Yeah. Thumbs up.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk Manhunt. And I will save my positives before I get to any negatives.
You have so some?
I have a positive. My positive is that I was unaware that the assassination of Lincoln was a conspiracy to kill all the top brass.
Oh, dude, it was, yeah.
I didn't realize that. I didn't, like, they don't teach you that in school. They mainly teach you, hey, Abraham Lincoln was shot in Ford's Theater by this dude. Right? So that's the information that I knew. So watching the beginning of it and realizing it's a conspiracy and that they actually stabbed the Secretary of State first and they have people that are supposed to kill Johnson and seeing all of that, that was interesting. What I didn't like was the editing choice, because I'm an editor, this is my thing. The segment of time where you have John Wilkes Booth, they're having him do these flashbacks to him deciding when to do it. And I was like, are your chyrons wrong? Because it's like 10 minutes before the assassination, but it's the day before. And I was like, wait, what? What are you doing? Like, you can't put a chyron up and be at the wrong time period.
After they establish where they are, they don't repeat the same one.
Yes, but then they go back. That was the problem. They were like, 10 minutes before the assassination, we're at this bar, but now we're going to flash back to earlier in the day, and then we're going to go back to the bar. Then we're going to flash back to this other. But regardless of that, my other issue is that the scene where he gets up to the balcony and he's standing behind Lincoln, and they stretch it out to be tense. And I'm like, why? We all know what's about to happen. Why are you trying to make it like, will he shoot him? Yes, he's going to shoot him. There's no tension in this scene the way they're doing it. And that scene lasts for a really long time. And so I was yelling at my television at that point because that was bad. That was bad. That was really bad. So once he actually shoots him and they go, you know, they're doing the chase and he's doing all his stuff. And then what I also didn't realize was that it took Lincoln like 12 hours to die. And everybody sits in a hotel room just staring at him as he bleeds out. I was like, oh, my God. Like, that was terrible. But it just made me go, oh, man, they have no modern medicine. They don't have a doctor who's even going to try to save his life. They didn't try.
Well, no, they did. They left out that part. Lincoln, he probably would have died anyway, but he definitely died because of the medical attention that he received, because they really, I mean, they didn't have knowledge at the time, and they went in there with their fingers and just poked around to try to get the bullet and did more damage as they were doing it. So they actually didn't talk about that. They didn't leave that part in. But yes, that's historically what happened. They went in and poked around in there. Yeah,
they show the doctor just sitting in a corner, just staring. And I was like, oh, okay.
You got to remember, this is
No.
When the Nick started, surgery was just moving out of barbershops into hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally get it. Like, I'm not dinging them for that. Like, that actually was the saddest part of it. I was like, oh, this is so tragic. You know, I was watching that and thinking, oh, this is terrible. And then they wouldn't let his wife in because they're like, women, no women in here.
Yeah, but no, but she's crazy. You wouldn't want to let her.
That's right.
She was hysterical.
Mary Todd Lincoln was literally crazy.
I remember that. I saw that in the movie, the Lincoln movie. That's true.
We swapped out Sally Field for Lily Taylor, and who's also good at being picked race. So.
she was fine, but I just... The best things I can say about it was the conspiracy at the beginning I thought was interesting. And then Lincoln dying slowly in the hotel was horrific to watch. You're like, oh. But I didn't feel – and the guy playing
Lincoln?
Lincoln Booth. Wasn't Douglas that great. But the guy playing Booth felt like a cartoon character to me. Like, I thought he was bad. I really thought he was bad. And I couldn't take him seriously. And I just was just not engaged. And so, yeah, that was a thumbs down for me. You guys say positive things. Go for it.
Yes. Allison, since you didn't talk about X-Men, I'll let you go first.
Okay. I am loving this show. And I guess because I'm a history nerd, I'm enjoying all the details that they go into, and a lot of the casting choices have been, you know, really on point, although they definitely were free with casting Tobias Menzies in his role as
Secretary of War.
The Secretary of War. Yeah.
And Stanton. Edward Stanton,
because yeah, the historical guy did not anyway look as nice as he does. Even the rest of the cast, they really went to town. I'd say the only poor casting choice was actually Hamish Linklater as Lincoln, because
yeah, he
he's
was
got
not good.
He's got the tall, gangly body, but he's got this cherubic little face. And so the only way they could compensate for that was by putting him under like 50 pounds of latex. And he still doesn't look right. And he doesn't have the right manner for Lincoln. He comes off like a high school kid who's been cast as Lincoln in a play. And it's kind of unfortunate. I happen to like the guy who plays John Wilkes Booth. I think he gets the delusional part of his character.
Anthony
really,
Boyle.
Really well. I think he does it really well, because I mean, I like the fact that they lean into, because, you know, people were saying, oh, he's a really successful actor. Well, compared to his father and his brother, he wasn't. He just played minor characters. People knew who he was, but he wasn't like, you know, the heroic big star that people think he was. And that was part of what made him just think that he had a destiny. And that if it wasn't going to be on stage, it was going to be historically. And he looked at being the Lincoln's assassin as what would catapult him into history. So
Which I did.
Yeah, well, you know, infamy, not fame necessarily, but infamy. And you just see this delusional thinking. In one of the more recent episodes, he actually was dreaming of himself being sworn in as president of the Confederacy. You know, it was that kind of delusion that this guy was laboring under. So, I loved all that. I think they took wonderful care in delineating the conspiracy. And they're taking it a step further, because in addition to the conspiracy that this little group had to kill all the members of the government, of the Union government, this show is suggesting that the heads of the Confederacy were aiding and abetting them. And historically, that's a little dodgy. That's in question. And they're coming down on the side of, yes, that was true. So that's a little bit of conjecture, but I like the way they're handling it. And it you know, there's something to be said for their argument. I think that the look of the show is fantastic overall. The way they've got everyone costumed, and the look of everything that they're showing, it really gives you a sense of the era. And you know, like so many where they treat the assassination of Lincoln as just, oh yeah, he was shot at Ford's Theater and done. You go into the details of, well, it took a while for them to track Booth down and all the rest of the conspirators, and all of these other things were happening at the same time. And it's the fact that they treated this more as a thriller than a history lesson is something that I really appreciate, and I'm really enjoying.
I thought that was
show.
A really smart choice and really made history come alive. I'm fascinated. One of my classmates at Annapolis is a descendant of Mudd, so I was surprised, because I had thought that Mudd was like an innocent, you know, oh, he didn't know who this guy was, but evidently the show's getting it right that he totally had met the guy before and tried to cover for him, which why he was convicted.
Yep.
But later pardoned because he helped stop an outbreak of some transmissible disease in prison.
Yeah, and also because Johnson was in charge by then, and he was all about pardoning all the Confederate people.
I thought it was fascinating that they classed Glenn Morshower to play Johnson, because he usually plays like a good guy, Secret Service agent, or you know, high-ranking government official or FBI or whatever, helping people. And this one, he's like taking center stage as one of the worst presidents we've had.
Yes. And he's kind of nailing it too. I mean, he's just as slimy as they come.
But yeah,
now you said the one thing that's got me interested to now turn it back on.
Glenn Morshower?
I love him a lot. So.
I almost didn't recognize him. It's like, why does that guy look kind of, oh my gosh. Because he's got hair.
Well, he's got fake hair, I'm sure.
Yes.
But
I mean, they basically made him look like Johnson. He's very convincing as Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
I love that actor. So, all right, fine. Watch one more episode. All right. Next up, we're going to talk Constellation. And we're going to talk episodes 3 and 4. And, man, I really, really want to like this show. Like, really, really want to like it. And I can't even say it's bad. There's nothing about it that I can necessarily pinpoint about why this show isn't quite working for me. Like, I'll put it on and I'll watch like 15, 20 minutes of it, and then my brain is like, what's happening? And it's like, I then want to change the channel. And I don't, and I mean, I'm not watching it on channel. Obviously, it's an app, but I want to switch to YouTube or something. It's like, it loses my attention.
You watch more Reshown.
Well, okay, sure. But I just like, I can't even describe it because the actress is fantastic. I love the little girl. That little girl is so good.
And because there's two of them.
Right. And the thing is I've already can tell I'm only in episode 3, but I can already tell she's in the wrong universe because her information is wrong. Like the wife of the guy who died, she says the wrong name. I was like, oh, you're in the wrong universe. And that woman's all affronted, which I could see why she would be. And she's like, wait, what? And then there's the, there's little details. Like, I'm pretty sure in this universe, she's sleeping with the PR guy or whoever that dude is instead of her husband. Cause her husband's all freaked out that she wants to like touch him. And I was like, you're in the wrong relationship. You're with the wrong guy. Like and I think part of that frustrates me, that she hasn't quite gleaned on that she's in the wrong place yet. I mean, I feel like there's a lot, and I get why she wouldn't, because who would first assume, like, oh, I must be in the wrong universe. Like,
I must be in an alternative universe.
Yes, of course you're not going to think that.
Like you do.
But I do think she should be clued into how many things are different. And now, and then when we keep jumping into the future where she's in that snow cabin with her daughter, that she's other daughter, she's now dragging through the snow. I'm like, what? Now she just looks like a crazy woman. And so I guess I'm wanting her to do stuff differently or smarter or something. I don't know what. But the fact that I figured all this stuff out means that they're pacing it out to me in the wrong rhythm, I think. That's my guess. But you guys are further along because I'm only in 3. So what did you guys think of the other episodes?
No, I thought 3 is where it really, I mean, they start to make it really obvious that something's really wrong because the press conference, and then she comes back and people are not, you know, instead of treating her as a hero, they're like, well, what happened then and what caused this and whatnot? And nobody wants to believe her, give her the benefit of the doubt.
They're basically calling her crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because they can't find evidence of the dead astronaut, the cosmonaut rather, that she keeps insisting is, you know, what ran into the space station. Literally nobody else saw it but her.
Right. I get that. Which is why they were like, did you see Lose Time have more hallucinations? I was like, absolutely she did. But of course she's like, no, of course I didn't. which is the correct answer in a situation where people think you're going crazy. So I get it.
I thought it was interesting that the episode 3 starts with a Hansel and Gretel callback by the daughter.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay. Right. You don't usually call that back unless you're going to pay it off somehow. So,
Did they?
Things that make you go, hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, I just feel, yeah. Allison, you talk. I already said what I feel like. Go ahead.
Well, I can understand. I mean, I think in some ways, yes, they do drag out this thing as far as her understanding of what's going on. Like you said, it's not the first thing that comes to mind. I must be in the wrong universe. I hate when that happens. So you do understand her being confused for a little while, but by the time the audience catches on, she ought to be catching on because she's supposed to be super smart.
Thank you.
And the thing is, she does eventually, but yeah, they do drag that part out. So that part gets a little bit frustrating. It's like you're snapping your fingers and waving at the screen and going, come on, come on, come on. That aside, I really love the mystery of this. You know, it's like, okay, this happened, and it clearly has something to do with that
experiment.
Machine that they had, that experiment that they had going, and which does exist in one world and doesn't exist in the other. And so, you know, half the people don't know what they're talking about. And but we don't know exactly how that functions. And tied into all that, you've got Jonathan Banks' character, Henry Caldera.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought originally in the first episode was his twin brother, Bud. And it's like, that's not his twin brother. That's his other self, because this happened to him too.
So the guy that's on the cruise ship signing the autographs is not the guy who's the scientist with the experiment.
No, that's
his brother.
That's another world, and that's his other self.
That's and what I was saying.
This
so that's
happened
not-
to them. This happened to them. They switched places. And you start to realize that, you know, and that this experiment is trying to get back to what happened. When he has that scene where he's talking to himself in the mirror, and it flashes to Bud, you suddenly realize, it's two different universes. How he's able to see himself in another universe hasn't been explained yet, but clearly there's two of them.
I was so confused,
and they switched,
because I couldn't figure out how he was doing the experiment and being on a cruise ship at the same time. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
yeah, it's
I was...
a different universe.
Thank you. That makes more sense now.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is his last name is Caldera, which is a volcanic crater. Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, okay, that can't be a coincidence that they chose that last name for him.
No, I don't think. I think that's going to be play more and more into his character. Well, you know, a caldera, really, it's the opposite of what we normally think of with a volcano being a big cone sitting up. It's a deep underground void that's filled with lava. And you may not even know it's there. So I think that says a lot about his character, is that there's like untapped danger that's under the surface. And so I think that's kind of interesting to have chosen that name for him.
All right. Next up, I think you guys are saying thumbs up for that. I'm saying,
I think it's big. You know, I'm already done with it. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I'd say if you stick with it, you're probably going to enjoy it, although it does get considerably crazier. I think it does that in a good way.
Yeah, I was like, I don't mind.
On a level from one to dark. Are we like talking 6.57? Because dark was like bat crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not quite dark crazy, but it's just maybe a hair under it.
So like 7.5.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk Halo episode 5 and 6. And Tom, why don't you lead us off? Because I don't remember what happened in episode 5 and 6.
You know, this show frustrates me because they just make choices to drop plot lines for like, we'll come back to this in 2 episodes. It's like, dude, come back into it. Because, what's his face? Ackerson or whatever.
Ackerson, yeah.
Yeah,
he's not in 5, but shows back in 6. It's like, come on, stop this.
I don't mind that, checking in on characters. I don't need to see every character every episode. I'm okay.
The season's so short, though.
Because we need to concentrate on the characters, give them the development that they need, so they feel like real people. So I don't love Ackerson. So if you tell me he's not in the episode,
but what I don't. I just kind of don't like the layout for this season. And I wasn't in love with the first season either.
I think first season had a lot of problems, but I'm really liking second season a lot.
I'm not bought in. It's like, first off, oh my gosh, the fanboys who complained about season one about Master Chief taking his helmet off. It's like,
hold my beer, my case of beers.
Yeah, this is a big middle finger to them.
I thought that was awesome, actually, because it's like his suit is now stolen. So he doesn't have his suit for several episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fantastic because it allows us to see, one, what does a Spartan look like without their suit? Like, what is that? Who is he? What kind of powers do they have? What abilities do they have? What does the suit bring to the table? And you really get to see the Spartans as a whole be like vulnerable. And I thought that was fantastic. I loved it.
And
I
wasn't
think you're
it
crazy, Tom?
I feel about Halo season two like you feel about Constellation. It's just, and I force myself to watch it, not watch doing anything else, working on a paper, especially for episode six. And I'm like, the whole thing with I can't remember her name, but she goes back to rescue the dude.
The other one. Riz.
The other one.
Riz.
Is it Valak?
Vanek is the guy who dies. So Vanek, Riz goes back to Vanek to
retrieve his body because we don't leave men behind, which is an admiral ethic from, you know, present day Earth forces. But it's just, and then she gets wounded grievously. And I don't know. I just feel so disconnected from... There's something about this series which keeps me from engaging. And maybe it's not because I didn't play a lot of the video game, but I think they're so far off from the video game.
The video game doesn't do character development at all. So they had to, if you're going to do character development, they had to create it. And I'm okay with what they're doing because the team, Silver Team, actually feels like a real team, which is why I'm mad at Kai right now, because she doesn't know she abandoned them exactly, but she thinks she's just following orders, and then she finds out that all her team are dead, and so she's kind of freaking out. And she keeps replaying the scenario, imagining if she was there to, like, help them. I thought that was really good. Like, it's the same as Riz going back for Vanek. So I buy how tight that team is. But Allison, you haven't talked yet. I was going to say, Allison hasn't talked yet, so I just wanted her to get a chance.
Tag it, Allison.
Yeah, no, I've never played Halo. I'm not a big video gamer.
Unnecessary for this, yeah.
And I'm really enjoying this, actually. I think maybe I enjoyed season one maybe a little bit more, but I really enjoyed two. And I do think, though, that there is a pacing problem. There is a Tom is correct in that they do have a problem figuring out what to do with their characters. But that's mainly, for me at least, confined to Soren, his wife, and his son, who seem to be off in their own little storyline that has nothing to do with anybody else. And that is an issue that doesn't get better. And it's like, what are you doing? Why are we watching this?
I thought for the longest time, because Soren used to be a Spartan, mm-hmm. I thought what they were doing was bringing Soren back into the fold, especially because you lose Vanek and now Riz is on the sidelines. I really thought, oh, Soren's coming back to the team. He's going to be part of the team.
Which is, I think, where it should have been going. And to some degree, I think it flirts with that at a certain point. And then they just forget what they're doing and go, oh, no, we have to bring it back to his wife and son. And suddenly they're on their own mission again. And it's just... it's really frustrating. I think the rest of the story is solid, but that sideline bit with them is just not well thought out, and it's not well paced or written.
I have to give them credit. The other woman, forgot her name, her story where she can see ghosts or the planet spirits or something.
That kind of intrigues me because I figured that
feels like it's going somewhere. Yeah.
Well, not only
Quan,
thank you.
It's kind of it's a little bit of an homage to Ray Bradbury's short story Night Meeting, where people are in two different time periods interacting, where she's interacting with this, I hate to say ghost because it's a sci-fi show, with this presence from the past.
Yeah, but it feels like it's the spirit of the planet or something. Like it feels, yeah, you're like, what is this? And I like that it keeps talking to her and it's freaking her out as it should. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's whispering messages to her and leading her to different places. And is six, I don't remember, how does six end? Because I don't, you tell us, Tom, because me and Allison have finished. So
yeah, we're six ends. Blurring oh, together.
Geez. Well, aside from, is it Kai beating the crap out of
That was really, that was heartbreaking for me, actually, because I felt that I knew that Kai doesn't know what to do in this situation. She's so used to following orders.
Well, what was weird is she's like, don't attack me, John, and he's doing nothing, and then she still beats the crap out of him. And she did it multiple, I mean, if you look at that fight scene.
Yeah, she kept coming at him.
There's a point where he stops resisting or stops trying to actively engage her, and she still wails on him.
Because her orders are to kill him, and she doesn't want to kill him. And then once he stops fighting, she doesn't kill him. She only knocks him out, which was why Ackerson sent a team to kill him after she leaves.
I wish that they had done something different with his character besides just make him stereotypical. I mean, just give him a mustache.
They do. The next two episodes, he actually has a turn.
Okay.
So I think
doesn't the episode end with him, Cortana helps him get to the artifact and he lays hands on it at the same time that the blonde alien chick that annoys
Mackie.
Me.
I don't think she has a turn. I haven't liked that character. I didn't like that character in season one and I don't like her now. So yeah, Mackie needs to go.
I like Mackie.
No,
I haven't seen her. I have not seen her except for the premiere of season two. And I'm like, well, I thought she was dead. I hope the explanation is good because I'm only on episode three.
They don't really explain it. Not really. Yeah. They just kind of.
But
I like the
actress, and I think that's an interesting idea where it's like, so she was raised by the Covenant, and that I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I don't know. I don't mind her.
I think she's interesting as a character. She's not likable as a character.
Oh no, she's not likable. No.
I mean, I think they're kind of Janie One Note.
Yeah, Janie One Note is what he said.
What's Janie?
Instead of Johnny One Note, Janie One Note.
Oh, well, I've never heard Johnny One. Okay, sure.
All right. Well, let's.
So you don't think she's as good? Wait, I just wanted to clear this up because as a person who also didn't finish Andor, so you don't think? Because I feel like Libya. When I was watching Andor, I was like, oh, I kind of like this woman that's part of the Imperials.
Oh,
she's
right.
Interesting. And you were like, but you said, no, she is bad. She knows what the Empire is doing. But you did like her as a character.
Yes, because she's well aware of her villainy. She knows her part in the story, and she's interesting. McKay, I find it boring. I don't find her as interesting as you do. Mackie, right. I don't find her as interesting as you do. I think she's boring.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I just wondering. All right.
Let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk about three body problem. And I want to preempt this by telling everybody I read the first book. I watched several episodes of the Chinese version of this. So I've come in it with some preconceptions about what the story is, which I usually don't, but this time I did. And I did this actually, honestly, because I found out that the lame showrunners from Game of Thrones were doing this. And so I was like, I want to be armed. I know. I was like, I want to be armed with information before I go into this. I don't trust these guys. And what I give them credit for is the one thing that kind of pushed me away from the books is, and keep in mind, I have a science degree. And listening to them talk about science in the book or reading it, whatever, was like, not great because there was a lot of science and it's very dry, presented in a very dry fashion in the book. There's a mystery in there that I thought was really great, but I was like, man, you gotta go through all of this stuff to get to the good stuff. And it was draining, a little bit draining. And then I watched the Chinese version of it and they pretty much did a one-to-one interpretation. And I was like, is that good? And this show basically consolidates the math. They're like, hey, these guys are physicists. They're really smart. They're saying something is broken in science. Here's a quick graph to show you broken science. Okay, now we're going on to the mystery. And I was like, thank you. So I actually thought they did a really good job of conveying that there is a lot of science involved, conveying that the science is not working the way people would expect, and conveying the mystery of why are all these scientists killing themselves? And you're like, oh, okay, this is the story. And I felt like it was presented in a very clear fashion as opposed to the book, which was, there was a lot. There were a lot of numbers, a lot of crunching numbers, like a lot. It was crazy. All right, Allison, your thoughts. What'd you think?
Yeah, I did not read any of the books or see the Chinese version. I did read that the books were more about ideas than people. And so I think they made a wise decision as far as making all these characters who I understand don't even know each other in the book.
And made them best friends.
And made them friends and made them so they're able to communicate with each other. And it gave you an ability to invest in them personally.
Right.
And I think that's important because that draws you into the story. I felt emotionally invested in these characters so that, you know, when they start investigating the mystery, when things start weird, start happening and taking a real toll, that you're involved, because, you know, it actually takes a while before they even say the word alien on this show. So, I mean, it could be anything that's happening and, you know, they take a while to get into that, but you're with them because you care about the characters.
Yes.
And so I think that that was a wise decision. And the characters are interesting and they're played by some really terrific actors. And some of whom are veterans of Game of Thrones. Like you, I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And then I saw who was producing it and I went, oh, except for that part.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still not entirely trusting them because remember, Game of Thrones was fantastic, you know, for a while. And then it just, they lost interest in it and it turned into garbage.
Also, it's not just they lost interest in it. They didn't have the books. They were having
This one, technically, the series is done.
Yeah, correct. It's done. So they do have the material. They do have the material, but they're also taking liberties with the material. So
they
it can go either way. And what really made the end of Game of Thrones crash and burn was that they weren't interested in it anymore. They were going to go on to Star Wars, and they didn't care, and they just wanted to wrap it up and get it over with. And I'm concerned with this.
The only thing is, there are three showrunners this time.
So at least there's one other guy who may not do that.
So if they bail, there's a showrunner to finish.
True. But but like I said, I don't entirely trust.
It should only go three seasons too. There's three books. It should go, each season is a book.
Yeah. Well, although they're consolidating things from the later books already so that they
can
make certain points. Now, I really enjoy the story. I think that there are certain logical inconsistencies in terms of the way the aliens and what they're after and such are being depicted, which I won't go into now because it really gets into it more in later episodes. But other than that, I'm having a good time watching it. I'm interested in it. I'm invested. I'm up to episode 5 in terms of my own viewing. And so far, I'd highly recommend this series. Now, what it's going to do in season 2, I couldn't tell you, but for right now, it's very, very watchable.
Peter, your thoughts, first 2 episodes.
I really like it. I was very confused the first, like, 20 minutes. I was like, I don't understand this at all. Like, and there's still a lot I don't understand, but it remains intriguing. So that's good. And you're right. I did not know that the characters didn't know each other in the book. It definitely helps that they're, like, all old friends or whatever. I don't know. I mean, pretty much every beat so far, I have a friend of mine who he's on episode 5. He really likes episode 5, but he said that he had a hard time in the first couple episodes with the virtual reality game. I like it. I think it's pretty cool. I like the Copernicus. I think that's the name she chooses. I like how she is reacting the way we would react, because it's like, wait, is this an NPC? Is this an actual bot or is this a person? Like, I like the level one and like the challenge. I like when they're like, put your hand on the ground to make time go forward. Like, I like all of that. I like also having Wong, who's not a scientist, very good actor, who's not a scientist, who's also trying to like figure these things out. I really like there's a moment in episode two where Wong and Augie meet and they're talking about how she's like, yeah, I met this woman and she's the one who told me that at midnight, you know, the universe is going to blink at me or wink at me or something. And they're like, well, we looked at the footage and there's like, you're not talking to anybody. But then he is smart enough that he looks at the footage and he's like, but I noticed that your lighter's not working. And then suddenly your cigar gets lit. So he knows that obviously there is somebody there that you were interacting with, but they've been scrubbed. And of course, that is the woman who later sees Wong. I keep calling him Wong. I'm sorry, because it's the actor's name. But sees him at I think it's his dad's cemetery?
No, it was his wife.
Or his wife. And so we, of course, get the creepy vibe because we're like, oh no, that's that creepy person or whatever. But oh my God, for me, because we're talking the first two episodes, that end of the second episode where they're like, something happened in 1977. And it's like, do not answer. And then not only does she answer, she's like, come conquer our world. I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? That's the worst. Oh my God. Like, yeah, that was fantastic.
Well, the thing that was so good about it is you're in her mindset. You understand why she does it. But then I pointed out to Peter off podcast that I was like, that makes her kind of responsible for her own daughter's death. Because her daughter was one of the scientists that kills themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, if you hadn't called those aliens down, she probably wouldn't have killed herself. So like,
well, is the assumption, okay, well, Allison, don't say if you know, but is the assumption that this cool virtual reality, this amazing Apple Vision Pro that they're all wearing, that's alien tech, right?
Correct.
That would be, that is the... I don't know it for sure, but that's what we're thinking.
Yeah,
it's clearly been built and programmed by human beings, but it's based on alien tech.
It has to be alien tech.
Oh, wait. It is human beings who made it? Wait.
Well, it's alien tech.
Yeah, well, because the aliens aren't physically here.
Well, no, he doesn't know this yet, Allison, so.
Okay. Oh, that's, sorry.
So, it is alien tech, yes.
Okay, so the material, that actual weird golden material might not even be a metal that we have.
Well, no, that is, because it's something that has to be made on Earth.
Oh, okay. My question, here's a weird question.
And there's issues about that I can't bring up now that I will bring up later that I have that have to do with logical consistency. But
one thing logical problem I had, it's not a huge deal. I brought this off podcast with Libya is, so the woman kills herself, which is the woman in the 60s and 70s daughter. Mm-hmm. And then her friend who takes the role as Copernicus in the game, she puts the headset on and then she starts playing the game. Then she shows her friend and it kills the moment he puts it on. It's like, you are not invited. At the end of the episode, he gets his own headset. How come she can wear it then if that headset was actually made for somebody else?
I don't know.
But good question. It does get answered.
Oh, it does?
It does. Okay.
It does get answered.
Okay. Because I was like, that feels like a plot hole where I'm like, it's not the end of the world, but I was like,
that question very much gets answered.
Okay.
Excellent.
So Allison, you didn't read the books, but you are liking this. You're five episodes in.
I am enjoying this tremendously. I just blew right through it. You know, the only reason I didn't watch till the very end was because it was already 2 o'clock in the morning. I needed to get to bed.
All right, well, let's move on. No, Tom's not watching it on protest because of the show.
Unless they stick, if you can tell me that the whole, is it just one season or whatever?
It's probably three. Yeah, because it's three books. So it's
but it is three books. It's three finished books, Tom. So they're not going to be able to make up whatever they want, right? I mean.
Or lose interest.
I said there's three showrunners. So even if they leave, you still have one showrunner left.
Yeah, you have Alexander Wu, I think, is the other guy.
Yeah. He's the I don't know, but he helps with all, I'm sure, all the Chinese storylines and making sure all that works right, because there's a lot
and,
of Chinese.
And I have to say, all the stuff that was done during the Cultural Revolution, all those scenes.
That's great.
Were amazing.
That was, opening is so horrific. I was oh my God. Oh my God. And
that's straight out of the book too. That's line by line out of the book.
That scene where, I know we got to move on, but that scene where the daughter, right, so she's the mom in the future, but she's the main character we're following, who says to come conquer the world. When she meets the woman who killed her dad and she repents, I was like, oh my God. I was like, and she's like lost her arm to gangrene. I was like, yeah, like, you're right. No, Allison's right. The stuff, because I'm watching it mostly because of the sci-fi, but the Chinese Cultural Revolution stuff is pretty good. It's really powerful and stuff.
Right. It really is. They did such a great job of it, and they didn't pull back on just how horrible everything was, is. And the thing is, it does give you an idea, because she just gets betrayed and betrayed
over and over
betrayed
again.
Over and over again. And I mean, by people, by the, you know, her
true. It's true. Yeah.
Her boyfriend.
Culture, by her boyfriend. Like, by the guy who she works with, you know, at the
who she thought was her friend.
Right. Yeah. I mean, every time she turns around, she cannot trust anybody. And it just hardens her into this person who, despite being warned off by one of the aliens, it's like, don't reply to this. I'm a pacifist. We will come and conquer you.
Yeah.
And she's like, sure, I'm putting on the welcome mat. I'll help you in. I'll serve drinks. You know, it's like, it was like anyone else would have been, are you kidding me? But by that time, we know her character so well that it makes total sense that she would do that. As horrible as it is, it makes absolute sense.
I would have been like, hey, specifics on how you're going to conquer.
What do you mean by the word conquer?
Well, that would require replying.
That's true.
That was the
deal. Oh, that's true.
Yeah, because my whole thing was, I was like, you mean conquer like kill us all? Or conquer like those are two different things. But anyway, we need to move on. We got one more show to talk about.
But it was so good. Thumbs up.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Next up, we're going to talk Shogun. And we're going to talk episodes 3 and 4, and I'm going to let Tom lead us on those. Shogun,
so you guys are liking, I saw the opening of Shogun with basically the white people, and I was like, are you kidding me with this? I was like,
it is so not
like,
about
no,
the
no,
white
no.
people.
He was like, no, that's not, it is in
it
Japanese.
It is not about the white people.
Yes, not at all. Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Why do we start with the white people? Why do we start with the Europeans?
Well, because that's how the book starts. I mean, it focuses on black folks.
Yeah, but there's very quickly, like, you did not go very far. You needed to go, like, 5 minutes more.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. I mean, just the fact that that number one on the call sheet is not the white guy.
Okay.
it's Hiroyuki Sanada, who's terrific as Toranaga.
He's so good.
Oh, God, he's
good. So is the whole show self-titled?
I hope he starts getting some big buzz from this role. Episode 3 picks up where 2 left off with the assassination attempt. And the knowledge that they were coming for Blackthorn, not for Toranaga. So Toranaga basically knows he needs to kind of change a venue.
Well, I mean, his whole disguise and hiding inside the women's litter was pretty funny. That happened.
You're going to despoil the lady's honor.
Yeah. Oh, that was great.
And they're all going, this is the guy that we're protecting? Really?
Oh, man.
It's interesting because most of the Japanese do not want to give Blackthorn the time of day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is. And what I also thought was interesting is the guy that's Toranaga is like his vassal who is betraying him, like, every chance he gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Toranaga's like, are you gonna betray me right now, or are you gonna wait for 5 minutes? You know? Well,
I love that they make Toranaga smart, that he realizes he can trust no one.
Right. But he keeps that guy close, which is like, well, I guess keep your enemies close, but the thing that cracks me up about that guy is he thinks he's smarter than he is. He is not that smart.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm as smart as Toranaga. I was like, dude, you are not. You are not as smart as him. And he keeps trying, and it's hilarious. And then his nephew is actually strangely kind of smarter than him, but not really, because they're both getting played by Torinaga by the end. Oh, my God. And then Torinaga's son's an idiot. Oh, good Lord.
Oh, yeah. The shiz he pulls at the end of episode 4, but I don't want to get too far ahead.
Yeah, he really proves what an idiot he is in that.
Yeah, that's what I'm
episode.
Saying. That episode is the one where we're going to talk about 4. So I'm just like, it's the line of smart and not smart. It's obviously not inherited. And he really tries to like tell his son to do this and do that and you'll learn. And his son's like, I will teach myself and be awesome. And then the thing that cracks me up is like, I feel like he knows when he does what he does that his father's not going to be happy. And I'm like, why would you do it? Anyway, Allison, your thoughts.
Well, I am so enjoying this series. I read the book years ago, and I saw the original miniseries that was done with Richard Chamberlain, which does focus absolutely on the white guy. And so this was like a breath of fresh air to me, because Blackthorne, although he's a main character, he is not the main character. And he's not the white savior, you know, he's not the guy who's teaching everybody everything. He's treated more like a pawn than anything else, mm-hmm. and kind of made to look ridiculous a lot of the time.
Well, the only thing is, he is smarter than they're assuming he is.
Yeah, he is. But he is not the key character in this.
No.
And that's what I love. It's more about the Japanese characters who are actually important to what's going on historically, and I thought all of the focus shifted to them, particularly in having everyone speak Japanese, mm-hmm. so it was just fantastic. I love the take that they're doing on this.
Well, I really like that it shows the language barrier too, because he keeps making gaffes and he's misunderstanding things.
Or he'll learn a phrase and use it improperly.
Properly, yeah. Stuff like that. Like, all of that really works. I think that really works to their advantage.
And the fact that the young widow, the consort? The consort? She won't even give him a break.
Fuji is fantastic. And, you know, the thing is, she's not really given a whole lot to do in either the book or the other miniseries. She's just kind of a cipher, and she's a real full-fledged character in this.
Yeah.
And there are so many times
for her. You feel bad for her.
Terrible for her, but you also you see her reactions to things, which are like, yeah, girl, I feel like that too. And and her resourcefulness, you know, when she gets handed the guns.
Yes.
Oh, right.
He turns them immediately on Yabushiga and like, yeah, she knows what to do with this. and then presents the swords to Blackthorne. And he doesn't know that they're valueless swords, but it's meaningful to him. So all of that is just gold. I love how her character is treated. And I love what they're doing with that. It's
and I love the politics too. They're really making the politics feel fresh and interesting. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it's just fantastically done.
Any other comments, Tom, before we wrap up?
Well, when Junior decides to attack Dad's enemies,
oh God,
committing a major breach of protocol and ethics, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, oh my gosh, come on, dude, really? You know that this is not going to end well for him.
No, well, he just started a war, basically. You know,
yeah.
Like, hey, Dad, look what I did.
Aren't you really proud of me?
Yeah. Watered the bonsai. Yeah,
and they were hardcore graphic, too. I was not expecting
that. Yeah, that was pretty.
Usually
impressive. You see a boom and, you know, the stuntmen are flown on wires and they just land and that's fine. There were body parts everywhere. Yes. It was it's like, really? Oh my God. They kind of went to town on that scene.
Yeah, it was great. All right. So we're saying definitely thumbs up, right?
Oh, wait.
Hi. If you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave me at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. You can listen to us on 6 Degrees of Geek and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.